ॐ भद्रं घरने विश्वनियामते वाह भद्रं पश्येमाक्षतेर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टिवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. एषो निरात्मा चेतसा वेतितव्यः एषो निरात्मा चेतसा वेतितव्यः यस्मिन् प्राणः पञ्चधा संदिवेश यस्मिन् प्राणः पञ्चधा संदिवेश प्राणैश्चितं सर्वमौतं प्रजानां प्राणैश्चितं सर्वमौतं प्रजानां यस्मिन् विशुद्धे विभवत्येष आत्मा यस्मिन् विशुद्धे विभवत्येष आत्मा. एषः अणुः आत्मा चेतसा वेदितव्यः यस्मिन् प्राणः पञ्चधा संदिवेश प्राणाहि चित्तं सर्वं ओतं प्रजानां यस्मिन् विशुद्धे विभवति एषः आत्मा. Eshaha anuhu atma, this self, eshaha this, atma, eshaha atma, this self, which is anuhu. Anu means an atom, but when we say anuhu atma, that is most subtle, because the atom, the anu, is considered in the Vaisheshikas and just within the different darshanas. When we say the anu, we're talking about that which is the smallest particle. So we can use that word anu to mean that which is the most subtle. There's nothing smaller, more subtle than that. So eshaha anu atma. So this atma, which is the most subtle, chetasa veditavyaha, it is something which has got to be known, chetasa, by the mind. So we'll see how that works. So this most subtle atma is to be known, chetasa, by the mind. And where is this mind? Yasmin pranaha panchada samdivesha. The mind which is yasmin here in this body, in which body? That mind which is abiding here in this body, and Shankara says in his bhasha, in the heart, in the body, in the heart. You know, that's the sthana, the location for the body, where the five pranas have entered. In this body, where the five pranas are the in and out going breath, the digestive system, the circulatory system, peristaltic movement. In other words, in this living body, in this body which is living, which is filled with the five pranas, which is living, which is filled with the vital force. Okay, so in this living body, by this mind, this self has to be known. So not by a dead body, right? It's not going to be known by a dead body. It's not, the Atma is not something to be realized after death. It's something to be recognized here and now in this body by this mind. It's very beautiful. It means the Atma, the self, is not to be found out here. There's no place to go for it. You need not go. There's no place to go, and you need not go anywhere. Or you can even say, there's nowhere to go, you can't go anywhere, the self is here, it has to be recognized here. It has to be recognized here by whom? By the mind. Why by the mind? Because the mind is the one that's ignorant of it. Right? The mind is the one that has the problem. The conscious being that you are has no problem. But the mind, which doesn't recognize the conscious self that you are, that mistakes yourself to be itself, has a huge problem. Because your mind is something which is continually changing and finite and subject to sukha and dukkha, to pleasure and pain, is also associated with its physical body, which is subject to illness and death. All physical bodies are, not just yours. Every body is subject to illness and old age and death. And every mind is subject to sukha and dukkha, pleasure and pain. Every mind is subject to continual change. And so it is this mind that has self-ignorance, that takes your being to belong to it. And so therefore all of the qualities that the mind has, all of the qualities of the body, that the body has, become you. That's the effect of the self-ignorance. It's called anyonya adhyasa. Because of the self-ignorance, there's a mutual superimposition that takes place that causes the conscious being that you are to be superimposed on the mind and the body, right? So the mind becomes a conscious being, the body becomes a conscious being. That's one half of the superimposition. The other half is that yourself becomes the changing mind and the finite and the mortal body. That's the other half of it. And so now you are a mortal being living within this creation, subject to all the vagaries of the creation and subject to sukha, dukkha, pleasure, pain, birth and death, etc. It's exactly samsara. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't escape it. The body and the mind cannot escape samsara, right? Because they are samsaras by the very nature. The very nature, the body and the mind are subject to birth, death, and change. That's it. You're not going to stop that. Even a jnani doesn't stop that. It's not like you become a jnani and gain self-knowledge, and all of a sudden your body stops changing. It doesn't grow old anymore. And all of a sudden your mind doesn't think anymore. It doesn't fluctuate. That's not so. Mind stays the mind. The body stays the body. The universe stays the universe. It's not the problem. The problem is the self-ignorance the mind has that has caused you to take yourself to be subject to all of these types of modification. You don't recognize yourself as the whole. That's the problem. And so this one that has the problem, the mind, is the one that now needs to know. And so here it says, Esha Atma. Another important thing, Esha Atma. This Atma. Not that Atma. This Atma that is residing here in this body has got to be known. This body that is living, that is in which all of the pranas, the vital force, has entered. So this living body, right, in this body here, this self has got to be known. Has got to be known by the mind. Because the mind is the one that has the problem. The Atma, yourself, illumines the mind as it illumines everything. Right? That's what I was saying in the meditation today. There is no experience at all that's away from consciousness. Consciousness, self, is the warp and woof of every experience that you have. It's impossible to have any experience whatsoever that's separate or away from consciousness. And in consciousness, they're always the same. It's not going through any modification at all. It's always the constant being, the constant presence that is the warp and woof of all experience that you have. But that conscious being, consciousness, has no problem. Right? And it's this consciousness, though, that needs to be known. This is the interesting thing. The conscious being that you are is fully known in terms of manifest experience because you say, I'm a conscious being. So there's not an iota of unknowing in terms of the experiential reality of yourself as a conscious being. So that isn't the problem. The problem is the aviveka. The conscious being that you are hasn't been differentiated from the manifestation of experience that is always has consciousness as its warp and woof. at this manifestation of experience. And I say manifestation of experience because really, if you were just to sit quietly and be alert to all of the experience that's taking place for you right now. One experience after another is manifesting. The sense it's coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. All of them. In layers and multifarious layers, all of the time. That's all that's happening. Manifestation, manifestation, manifestation. All of that manifestation has an essence which is changeless. And that essence is me. There is no part of the manifestation of my experience that is away from me, that is away from consciousness. Right? I'm the conscious being, right? But I can't find any experience that is separate from that conscious being. It's just that the experiences are manifesting. They're coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, changing, 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 changing. And its substance isn't changing. The conscious substance of the manifestations of knowledge, of perception, right? The substance, the warp and woof, the very being that's there, isn't moving at all. And in fact, that is your experience. I'm not saying something that is odd or away from you. In fact, that is your very experience. That all of the experience that you have is taking place in the constancy of my conscious being. And there is no distance between that consciousness and the experience that I'm having. I can't separate it. If you were to separate, it's not possible to separate it. If you were to try to separate it, what would happen is that that manifestation would not be there. Consciousness would be there, but whatever the manifestation, whatever the experience, would just simply not be there. Right? But the conscious substance would be changelessly there, and you can never veer away from it. There's nothing you can do about it at all. And so now, it is this changelessness of your being that is present no matter what the experience is. It is this that has got to be known by the mind. And in order to be known by the mind has to, we'll get to that, the mind has to relax a little bit. It needs some vairagya. The mind has to gain a little bit of vairagya. Vairagya means a dispassion where it is not so committed to the subject-object relationship where I am this person who wants this thing. Right? When my mind is committed to this thing that I want, this jivatvam, the state of being an individual, is manifest in that commitment. Because I need this. I want this to be in this way. I want that to be in that way. So in that desire to control the situation for my own well-being, I have, in a sense, solidified in my mind the subject. I am the subject, you are the object. What we need to do is to relax for a moment and then recognize that the subject also is the object. Right? The subject, what I've taken to be the subject, is the object. Is as much as the object. In other words, I can as simple as this. I look at all of you right now. You're all the object. You're an object, you're an object, you're an object. It means you're objectified by me. I see you as an object. It's like I see the rug as an object. I see you people as objects. You know, I see the space as an object. You're all objects. But I'm the subject, right? I'm the subject. You're all the objects. I'm the subject. But of course, when you're looking at me, I'm the object, right? So now what has to happen is the so-called subject has to be recognized as one of the objects. The subject, what I've taken to be the subject, is actually the object. It's part of this creation. It's part of Ishvara. It belongs to the order of Ishvara. And so then, if I allow what I have taken to be the subject to be the object, which it actually is, because just like I'm aware of all of you, this body is also as much an object of my awareness as my sense organs and my thoughts. All of them are part of the object. When that's so, I have a much clearer understanding of the reality of my experience, which is what? that the totality of my experience is consciousness. There is nothing in my experience that is separate or away from consciousness. And so, in fact, the subject and the object, so-called subject and the object, seer and the seen, knower and the known, enjoy me for its subject. So I am the subject of the universe, which is the object. I am the subject of the universe, which is the object. Now you look at all of the experience that you have, all of the manifestations of experience that I have, and that's the reality of it. You are always the subject of the totality of your experience. What you normally relate to as the subject is actually part of the totality of your experience. See that? This body, mind, sense organs belongs to the object, which of which you are the subject. And the you that is the subject of this can't be separated from it at all. If you try to separate it, this manifestation goes away, that's all. You can never separate being, the being that you are, from the totality of your experience. So here, in this verse, he says, pranaihi chittam. This mind, together with the prana, means the whole vital force of the mind, with the pranas, sarvam, chittam, sarvam, means the antikarana, the whole mind, with the pranas, everything that makes this jiva a conscious being. This whole thing, chittam, is otam. Otam means vyaptam, means it is completely pervaded by consciousness, by that atma. For all beings, prajanam, for every being, prajanam, for all beings, the mind, with the pranas, are pervaded by consciousness. You can't separate the consciousness from them. And that is also true for your experience. Any thought, and I'll tell you in a minute why this is so important in this verse, but in any thought that you have, any feeling that you have, any perception that you have, you can't separate, you can't say that it has any distance from consciousness, or that it's even anything else but consciousness. Can you pull the consciousness out of it? It's like pulling the pot out of the clay. You can't pull the existence, your being, out of the thought, out of the feeling. There's no distance there. There's nowhere to go. There's no way. It's warp and woof. Why we say that there's a difference between consciousness and the thought is not because consciousness is other than the thought. It's because consciousness is the stable substrate being of the thought that doesn't change and the thought comes and goes. That's the satya mitya, right? The manifestation, the thought itself, goes on changing, changing, changing. The being of it doesn't change at all. The consciousness doesn't change. The thoughts change, right? But the thoughts are not away from consciousness to have some other reality. Well, there's a thought over here and here's the consciousness. So the thoughts have no reality apart from the consciousness. So we can say the consciousness, the thoughts are consciousness. They have no, they're nothing else. It's like saying, I can say, listen, the pot is the clay. The pot's the clay. It has no being apart from the clay. Right? It's only clay. That's all it is. I could say your thought, it is only consciousness. There is no self. There is there is no being. The thoughts have no being at all away from consciousness. And that's your experience. That's why you can say with such conviction, if you don't have self-knowledge, I am my mind. I am my mind. That's who I am. I am my mind-body. Why? Well, because the mind pervades the body with a sense of touch. That's the whole subtle body pervades this. And so, because there's no separation between me and the mind and the body, say, I am this body. It's like the pot. What if the pot were to say, I am the clay. I am the clay. I am the clay. So I, from the standpoint of the jiva, I say I'm this individual body, mind, sense organs. I am the self. And you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right, because the self is the very warp and woof. It totally pervades. It is the very being of the mind. It is the very being of the sense organs. It's the very self, the very being of the body and of the chair, okay? And of the space and of the chimes and of everything. The problem is that this body, mind, sense organs that has this great ahankara, this great I notion, right, has not been recognized as part of the totality of the experience that I'm having. And so the stability of my being, which is the self of the whole, is taken to belong to the self of the finite body, mind, sense organs. So now, he says, it is this self that has to be known by the mind, which is the very, the self that needs, that must be known by the mind, is pervasive to the mind. The very warp and woof of the mind. It's not away from the mind. Because there's a problem that's going to come in here. Let me just finish this last line. He says, so this self being the very warp and woof of the mind, when that mind is pure, free from these raga dveshas, likes and dislikes, we'll get to that in a moment. So, yes min vishuddhe, then this atma, Vibhavati, means it manifests itself. It becomes apparent itself. Okay, that's exactly what it says. So let me explain what this means. First of all, the Atma, which is the very being of the mind, has to be known by the mind. How does that take place? When knowledge takes place, the knowledge that we're used to, knowledge takes place, the mind, using a means of knowledge like my eyes, has to perform a twofold function. Swamiji discusses this in his Bhasha, so that's why I'm getting into it now. It's very important also to understand. It has to perform a twofold function. One is the first thing that happens, is that the mind has to go out through the sense organs, or that coming in, there's debate about that, whether the mind goes out or the light comes in. It doesn't matter. In any case, the mind envelops the object. For instance, if I'm looking at that painting, my mind now has to have a thought modification of that painting. So now I'm enveloping the painting. This is technically, it's called vritti vyapti. The vritti, the thought modification, thought modification pervades the object, whatever it is that I need to know. Right, so I have to have a vritti, a thought modification of it. That means the thought modification pervades the object, it envelops the object. Once it's enveloped the object, now the pramana is taking place. Right? Now the knowledge, the pramana is taking place, and the object becomes known. Right? Once that happens, the object is known. That's called palavyakti. That's the fruit of the pramana. Pala means fruit. The first thing that happens, it's really not in sequences of this happens and then a few minutes later this happens. This happens and so this happens. Like this, if this happens, this happens. So the first thing that happens is that the mind envelops the object, and then the object is known because the mind has enveloped it. So there's this twofold situation that happens when we gain knowledge of anything in the world. First we envelop the mind, contacts the object, and by doing that the object becomes known. So there's a twofold process there. Here, the Atma is not an object. Right? Atma, the self, yourself, is not an object. And so how can the mind know the self, which isn't an object, because all the mind can do, can know, are things that it can objectify. And once it objectifies it, it becomes known. The Atma is not something out here within the creation that can be objectified. And so therefore, people say that the self transcends the mind. The self cannot be known by the mind. Right? And the Upanishads will say this too. They're coming at it from a different slant. This is going to deal with that in a different way here. So now look, if we say, which is also true, this is true, the mind, the self is not an object, you know, and I need to gain self-knowledge. This has got to be known by the mind. So how is that going to happen? How can the mind know when the self is not an object? So the mind can't go out and envelop the self. So that then it can know. It'll envelop the self, the pramana will have worked. No. Then I can be aware of it. There is no such self out here. Well, the difference here is that there is no self out here, but the self is the self of the mind. So the self is not away from the mind. It pervades the mind. It's the very being of the mind. Just like the clay is the very being of the pot. Right? And so that means there is no distance or separation between the mind and the self for the mind to have to go out and envelop the object. See what I mean? The mind doesn't have to go out and envelop the object so that the object can be known. The self is already totally present as the very being of the mind. So that being so, how does knowledge take place? So what's said here is that through the pramana, which is the Upanishads are the pramana for that, the mind then what? Has a vritti vyapti of its own content. In other words, if the pot, instead of looking out at all of these other objects, the other pots, you know, and the table that it's sitting on and the space, etc., if it's not looking out at the other objects, but instead is now focused on its own self, on the clay alone, right? Then what happens? So now look at this in terms of your situation. Here's the mind, and the mind, your mind, is now, through this teaching, being directed to recognize, to turn on its own content, to recognize the very being that is the warp and woof of the mind itself. And so now instead of the mind having a vritti of something out here, something that's externalized, objectified, instead of that, it is now turning on itself and having a vritti vyapti of its own content. See that? The mind itself is pervading its own content. It's like the clay, getting the pot getting lost in its clayness. The vritti, the mind is now directed toward its own content and is now having a vritti vyapti. The mind itself is now pervading its own content. Right? Once this happens, the content is the very subject, the very consciousness, which in a normal thought modification now is there left illumining whatever the mind is enveloping. Right, if my mind envelops this painting, now awareness is illumining that vritti. So that nama-rupa, that name and form, is enveloped by the awareness. But now, the mind is enveloping, having a vritti vyapti, of consciousness itself, the one that is normally illumining the vritti. And so now here we say, when this vritti vyapti takes place, there is no pala vyapti. There is now no subject-object relationship at all. There's just simply the subject. There's simply the subject. There's not the subject aware of anything. There's just the awareness of the subject. That's called vritti vyapti with no pala vyapti at all. That's how knowledge takes place. And why this verse is important is because this could not happen. This type of knowledge could not happen unless it was the very being of the mind. But how could it happen? It's not possible. If the self is something that's non-objectifiable, but is away from the mind, it's not objectifiable, but it's other than the mind, then there is no way for the mind to know it. But if the mind is if the self is the very self of the mind, the very being of the mind, then it's just a matter of the mind recognizing its own being, which is the consciousness which allows it to know anything. See that? And so now, if you look at in your own experience, say even when we're doing a guided meditation or as we're talking, every instant that you just recognize, the mind turns on itself, just on the conscious being that you are. That's a vritti-vyapti. When that vritti-vyapti takes place, as long as that's taking place, there's not anybody to come along and say, oh, look at the consciousness. Right? Because it is already the consciousness. There's no consciousness to look at the consciousness. The consciousness is the consciousness. You see what I mean? And so there's a what we call akhanda-akara vritti that takes place at that time. Akhanda-akara vritti. The vritti means at that time there is no division, there's no subject-object duality at all. There's just the simplicity of your own being without somebody else aware of it. But there's not going to be somebody else inside of you who is aware of you. The only one that's aware of you is you. Right? It's the conscious being that you are. There's not another consciousness lighting you up. You are the light itself. And so when the mind folds in on the conscious being that you are, at that time there's no subject-object relationship at all. And so at that time, there's just the pure being of yourself. So now, in this second line, this last line, he says, Yasmin vishuddhe vibhavati esha atma. In the mind which is pure. Now, what does that mean? It's not thinking of anything else. Nothing else is happening in that mind. It's a vishuddha. There's no raga dvesha, there's no distraction, nothing is going on. It's just the mind, then, is at that moment resolved in the self. Then this self reveals itself. The self reveals itself. Who else is going to reveal it? There's no other consciousness to reveal it. So the self reveals itself means you are self-shining. Right? The mind now has become withdrawn and now withdrawn from all of the activities in the world, its raga dveshas, etc., likes and dislikes, etc. It is now just turned toward the self. Now, what is revealing the self? The mind is turned toward the self. Is the mind the conscious being to reveal the self? Or is the self the conscious being which reveals the mind? See that? Is the mind the conscious being that reveals the self? Or is the self the conscious being that reveals the mind? The self is the conscious being that reveals the mind. It's the self because of which all experience is known. If the self is the conscious being that reveals the mind, then the self is the conscious being that's there to reveal the self. See what I mean? Because the mind isn't going to do it because the mind isn't the conscious being. Unless you say the mind is the conscious being because there is nothing else but consciousness. You say that, that's fine. Okay? But so what reveals the self? The self reveals the self. The self is self-shining. So when the mind becomes quiet, right? When the mind becomes quiet and is turned toward the self, then the self shines of its own accord. Nothing else comes along to reveal it. So this is the verse. It's a beautiful verse. So, Eshaha Anu Atma, this most subtle self, Chetasa Veditavyaha, has got to be known. It's potential case, Veditavyaha, potential participle. It has to be known by the mind. It can be known by the mind alone. That's the Veditavya. It can be known by the mind, not by anything else. Like for the one who is ignorant, the standpoint of the self, it is pure consciousness. From the standpoint of the self, there's no ignorance. Like there's just consciousness. All is fine. But from the standpoint of the mind, there's a problem. And it's by this mind, in this body, in this living body, the body that has all of these pranas indwelling it. It's by that mind, in this living body, that this self has got to be recognized. And how can it happen? Well, it's because chittam sarvam, this entire mind, the whole mind, along with the pranas, have consciousness as their warping whip. That otam means vyaptam. Consciousness pervades it. It's the very being. It pervades, not like the air pervades the room. It's like the clay pervades the pot. That's what this is what the vyakti means here. Like the clay pervades the pot, it means the clay is the pot. That's how consciousness pervades the mind. There is no other being there. But why we can say it pervades is because the thoughts come and go and are continually changing. But they have no other substance than that changeless conscious being, which is the very self. And because, so it says, the self for all prajanam, for prajanam is in the plural. Prajana means a being, humans. So for human beings, the entire mind, sarvam chittam, the entire mind, including along with the pranas, right, otam, is pervaded by the satma. Right? It is pervaded, has that for its warp and worth. So now, yasmin vishuddhaye, when this chitta, when this mind is quiet, right, is not engaged in anything else, right, means the pramana. There's no other activity happening. The activity is the mind is with itself, is with the self. At that time, the self reveals itself. It's not that the mind reveals it. The self reveals it itself. Because the self is the consciousness, which is the truth of the mind. See what I mean? The self is the truth of the mind. And it is the consciousness which the mind enjoys. So when the mind becomes quiet or focuses, resolves into consciousness, right, its focus is on consciousness, then what's happening? The self itself is shining without anything else. Okay. Let's just take a minute.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamidachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.